The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U Mobile.
This morning on The Breakfast Grill, we are pleased to have Peter Bellew, CEO of Malaysia Airlines. Good morning, Peter.
Thanks for the invitation on BFM, and apologies for my voice, a bit hoarse.
So. All good, no worries. Now, folks, if you have any questions for Peter, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Again, that's 018-789-8899, or you can tweet in your questions at BFM Radio. So, Peter, it was just over a year ago that you were last on the grill. Give us an update here. Where is Malaysia Airlines today in its turnaround plan?
So I guess a bit like a soccer match, we're about halfway through the match right now.
So it's halftime?
It's halftime. We've scored a few goals, but it's about two all, I would say. We've made good progress in the last year. When I took over, sales were very, very poor. We had very low loads on the aircraft, and it was quite worrying. The competition was very strong, particularly on London. And we embarked very quickly just on a big sales campaign last August. It worked very well. That sustained itself right through, you know, the current year as well. I think a big part of that was deciding to keep the brand as it was, to stay with Malaysia Airlines, stay with the existing logo, stay with the current uniform, and play to our strengths as a quality carrier, five-star carrier, to try and put that back in the people's minds around the world. And that appears to have worked. We did a big expansion into China. That's taking place as we speak at the moment. That was quite a bold move because we announced, as soon as I got the job, I thought that was the way to go. Mm. We got great cooperation from the Chinese government. I went over to China. I had to had some difficult meetings. We had to make some significant apologies to people over there about what had happened in the past. And but the Chinese people and the government have really... they couldn't have helped me any more than they have done. And with the assistance of the Ministry of Transport here, we've got some very attractive slots in very important airports. And it's quite visible. If you're out at KLIA now, the place is just mobbed with Chinese visitors. Mm. And I spent 4 or 5 hours out there on Saturday talking to many of them. And they really, really love coming to Malaysia. Many seasoned travellers would say the best welcome they get in the world is here in Malaysia. And personally, I think tourism from China over the next 5-10 years could be a massive growth engine for the economy here.
All right, and we'll get more into your growth plans in just a bit. Now, going back to this Khazana 12-point recovery plan, now that was announced back in August 2014. And as you know, so much has happened over the last 3 years, certainly on the global macro stages. So in your estimation, does that original plan still hold water? Is it still relevant here 3 years out?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, I think it's good to have a plan and we're sticking to it as much as possible. I think the only slight deviation was we probably will have slightly less aircraft at this stage than they originally envisaged. And, you know, the expansion into China wasn't foreseen in that plan, but you have to be opportunistic about that. Mm. Also, within that plan, the emergence of a very, very strong third force competitor here in Malaysia wasn't envisaged. You know, that they'll carry 8 or 9 million passengers this year. So that certainly creates a tension in pricing and competitive. But that's life and you just get on with it. And we're dealing with that as best we can.
Right. Now, you say a slight deviation here. But looking at the ringgit, though, since that plan was rolled out on August 29th, 2014, the ringgit has fallen by about 36% since then, right?
Yeah.
So given that price tag of 6 billion ringgit, right, 6 billion ringgit back in 2014 versus 6 billion ringgit now, vastly different, right? 36% different. Does it still work? Billion ringgit, is that enough?
That's our pocket money, and we just have to play with it as best we can. I think, you know, I may be able to do many things, but determining the election in America of Mr. Trump, and we saw a big change in the currency around then. So what we're trying to do is this year, the change in the value of the ringgit against the dollar would have impacted us additional costs of about 400 million ringgits this year. And we found between 300 and 400 million ringgits of additional savings we think we can make, mostly around fuel, ground services, handling charges and other overflight charges. We're executing that at the moment. It's going to be really tough. It's a very ambitious target to hit, but that's the way we're trying to deal with it rather than going looking for more money. Mm. I think it's down to driving for the next 12 months now, driving as much sales at a slightly higher fare as we can, playing to our strengths as a premium brand and moving forward that way. That's the way we get there.
But already there's been some slippage in some parts of the original Khazanah plan. Now, back in August 2014, again, Khazanah said, and I quote, "The plan will enable Mars to achieve sustained profitability within 3 years of delisting by the end of 2017. Yet, in recent interviews, you said that the profitability will be next year. So there's that pushing back, or that goalpost has been moved there already. So what's to say the other deadlines will be met? I'm thinking of that a sustained profitability by next year, even the potential listing by March 2019.
Well, actually, the budget that was done for the 5 years showed a loss in the current year and profitability, across the full year next year. That was what was actually in the plan. I think we'll hit that. I think we're on track to do that right now. I think the second half of next year, we will hit a sustainable profitability, and then that will prepare us to go back on the capital markets in 2019. So we're on track. It's going to be really tough. It's the aviation business. Competition is probably the most competitive in the world right now, which for consumers in Malaysia is a wonderful thing. There's probably been all-time great value fares right now, but that's life, and we just get on with it.
Sustained profitability being 5 quarters of straight net profit, is that how it's defined?
Well, I think it's quite seasonal, the business in Malaysia. So the first half of the year, you will normally find it's quite difficult to, particularly in the network business, to always make a profit. I think the second half of the year, quarters 3 and 4 of the calendar year, are generally much, much stronger.
Okay.
So I think every year you would see a carrier like Malaysia Airlines, you'd probably struggle in the first quarter, second, third, fourth quarter, be profitable.
Okay, but in your previous grill, you mentioned that as a key criteria for the relisting, though, you got to hit 5 quarters of net profit. So you're saying, again, that's not the case anymore? Is that not a key criteria?
I think that is possible to do that.
Okay.
And I think it's just a matter about how you phase costs in a year.
Now, you say it's possible, but even looking at today's climate, Singapore Airlines, Cathay Pacific, even these two traditional heavyweights in the region, they can't even claim to 5 straight quarters of net profit. How are you going to be different then?
I think it's about attention to detail and costs, and I think it's about driving the revenue up. We're seeing a recovery in many, many markets quicker than I expected, and particularly in the premium traffic. Our advanced bookings on our business class are way ahead of where we would have expected them to be. I just spent last week and I was in Australia, and we see a big recovery in our traffic in Australia. So I think it's about incremental. All we have to do at the moment, if we can increase our average yield and our average revenue about 3%, 4%, 5% over the next 12 months, which I think is quite possible, we'll be hitting the targets that we need to hit and moving us forward in the direction we need to go.
All right. Also, as part of your strategy, you seem intent on bringing luxury back to Malaysian Airlines. What are you basing that on? Is the demand for, again, the premium side of things, the luxury stuff, is that demand still there?
There's very few full-service carriers left in the world now. And, business class, a lot of people still require business class when they're traveling. They enjoy it and they're willing to pay for it, or their companies are willing to pay for it when they travel. We changed our wide-body aircraft to have all lie-flat beds. That's been incredibly popular, and it's seen nearly a 50% increase in our business overall in business class. So Asians like wide-body aircraft. That's what they expect. I think with our peer group airlines, that's what they have as well. So we're improving the food. We're improving the in-flight entertainment. That's happened. We've put in the lie-flat beds. There's just we're not going to unbundle the product. We're not going to start charging extra for lots of different things. And I think that's a differentiation from Malaysia Airlines. If you go with other airlines, you might pay 7 other extras for your ticket. Mm-hmm. But with us, you get everything included in the price.
Right, and just real quick on that, on those lie flat beds, just a quick check here says it can cost anywhere from $80,000 to $500,000 US dollars here. Where do your lie flat beds, where do they lie, pun intended, in that price range?
We did a much better deal than that.
Oh, okay.
So you go below that.
Below 80,000?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah. So
now, again, just looking at the market dynamics here, because say, take your former employers Ryanair, right? Compare them with Lufthansa or Air France. Now, looking at their trailing 12-month operating margins, Ryanair is 3 times more profitable than Lufthansa, 4 times more than Air France. You couple that with when you consider the world's 10 most profitable airlines, only 2 are full-service carriers. So again, why this push to premium luxury when the markets show otherwise?
I think there's different customer segments in different areas. I think the low-cost sector is well-served here in this part of the world already. I think trying to go down that track, which maybe Malaysia Airlines did in the past, it didn't work, and I don't believe it would work. I think there is 15 million customers a year that Malaysia Airlines can serve with a level of luxury and a level of professionalism, a level of Malaysian hospitality and a level of comfort and sincerity that people will enjoy and they're willing to pay for. I think there's horses for different courses, and I think we can address that market.
Okay, we're going to quickly address some. We've got plenty of questions coming in here. Real quick, are you comfortable with the current structure, or is there a need to streamline further?
No, I think the job cuts we've done in the past are finished. We don't plan to change anymore. In fact, towards the latter half of this year, we'll be recruiting more pilots and more engineers, and that'll be to facilitate growth and for people who are retiring.
Okay, in just a bit, we'll talk about your hiring or perhaps rehiring plans. I'm speaking to Peter Bellew, CEO of Malaysia Airlines. This is The Breakfast Grill.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Breakfast Grill. I'm Tan Chung Han, and with me in the studio is Peter Bellew, CEO of Malaysia Airlines. Now, Peter, we understand you're currently in hiring mode. You're looking for captains, first officers and engineers, among others. Yet, on the other hand, you're supposed to be cutting costs. Balance that out for us, right? Why hire when you're supposed to be watching your bottom line?
The pilot and the engineer market in Asia is very competitive right now. And like any other airline, we will have turnover of staff. We will lose people who will move on. We've got some pilots moving on to China, so to some of the Gulf airlines, and engineers likewise. So it's just a normal thing. It's a feature of business. I expect for the next 5 years, we'll probably have turnover of 5%, 6%, 7% in these areas, and we just need to keep replacing. Also, for the pilots, I think we need to bring in some young blood now. I think we need to hire some young people and give them an opportunity to come through, and they'll be the future pilots, the future leaders in the company going forward.
By younger pilots, you mean also cheaper, right?
No, not necessarily. I think they start at a certain scale. I think it's more about we have a number of people who are getting close to retirement age, and we need to bring in people. But it's just a normal business.
But speaking about that range, though, and I got this from one of your current pilots, he claims that Malaysia Airlines now underpays its pilots, even experienced ones, by anywhere from 60 to 250% compared to your competitors. So how are you going to retain staff if you're underpaying them by double, triple digits?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's 250%, but certainly our competitors, there has been significant wage inflation in the pilot market in Malaysia in the last 12 months, a little bit like the price war that's taking place. And, we have a salary scale and we stick to it. We will have to try and deal with our staff as best as we can to try and manage them to stay. But, we're not going to get into bidding up the price of pilots. I think... I've learned over the years that that's a zero-sum game and it just never ends.
Hmm. I also got these details from some of your other current staff. For example, pilots and crew are now housed in below-standard hotels. They point to the ones in Auckland and Adelaide in particular. Staff apparently have to pay for their own medical bills when they are overseas or company time. So again, as you're watching the costs for your airlines here, will this be the norm for Malaysian airline staff moving forward?
I think that the hotels are all of a good grade and we're constantly reviewing those, and the staff get reimbursed for their medical costs. So, and we always look after our people if they get ill overseas.
All right, we got a question here from Anand. So the question is, once the airline gets back to full profitability or perhaps a sustained profitability and starts recruiting again, will it re-employ staff that were laid off previously? Now, we recall those 6,000 staff that were laid off a couple of years ago.
Yeah, after 2 years, anybody who's left and got a package to leave they can apply to come back. Currently we may well expect some of those people will apply to come back, and they may well be offered employment.
All right, but perhaps at that scale that you're offering, right?
It'll be whatever the current scale is.
Okay, yeah. All right. Now, also, since you were last on the grill, the passenger service charges between KLIA and KLIA2, those have been equalized, at least for the domestic and the ASEAN flights, but not for your international flights. So that was a key point of contention in your previous grill. So are you a happier camper now?
No, I'm still a bit of a grumpy old man, I think, on this. I do think it is quite ridiculous that... a terminal that's 2 kilometres away, people pay $5 less an airline to process the passengers than 51 other airlines that are just 2 kilometres away in a terminal that's very, very packed right now. So I think it should have been equalised last year. I think it's unfair, but it's due to be equalised on the 1st of January next year. And then truly we will have a level playing pitch. Mm. My costs per passenger are $5 higher. That's normally the profit per passenger that most airlines make. So, I think truly we'd be on a level playing pitch.
Now, in addressing that playing pitch, then how competitive is KLIA, your home base, in comparison to the regional hubs?
It's very competitive. I think the problem with the KLIA at the moment is it is very, very busy. And that puts a strain on our own resources day to day. But we work with MAHB to try and manage that.
Now, there's a study out there that there's an estimated $1 trillion that's set to be spent on either building or upgrading airports all around the world, be it Beijing, Bangkok, South Korea, Singapore, Hong Kong, of course, all in the name of really establishing those major hubs, right? So you operate out of KLIA. Again, as a hub, though, how does it stack up against its regional peers? Because, again, that's your home base, though.
Yeah, I think, listen, KLIA 2 was built. It's a pretty fantastic facility, pretty amazing resource there. It's only half full at the moment. It's got vast capacity to take more passenger traffic. I think the two terminals need to be linked up airside via bus, the same as you would get in Heathrow or practically any other airport in the world. I'm sure that will happen over the next 12 months, and that will facilitate transfer traffic much easier between the two terminals.
All right, real quick, let's segue into some questions from customers here. Firstly, why should I remain an enriched member? And also, another listener says claims that Maas devalued the enriched loyalty program. Redemptions are now more expensive. What are you going to do to address that?
Yeah, the enriched program has become more realistic relative to other programs around the world. And we've simplified the process of the way people claim their benefits. I think it's still a very valuable program and something we'll be investing in very heavily over the next 12 months.
All right. Also, we understand you're looking for partnerships for that Hajj charter carrier. We understand that you plan to apply for that license by this quarter. Any updates there?
Yeah, we put in the initial application for what's called the ASL with MAVCOM. And, I spent a week in Saudi Arabia myself talking to prospective people we would cooperate with around the Hajj Umrah. We're just finalising the business plan at the moment, and we're moving forward with it. We're seeing an awful lot of business already on the Umrah, the significant growth happening this year as Malaysia Airlines. And I think as that transitions in, there's opportunities all over the world. There's many, many countries, and we've met many people who I didn't even realise that there were such huge Muslim populations, Thailand and China, right across the Asian continent. So I think there's a good opportunity for that. I think it's a great use of an asset that we had thought we would try and sell and may well have been left to one side and not sold.
But here's the thing. I understand the idea is for it to be its own separate entity.
Yeah.
So isn't this distracting you from the main task at hand, that is to turn around Malaysia Airlines? Because this was not part of the original plan.
Yeah, I think the thought was to try and sell the aircraft. I think the aircraft would be very difficult to sell in the current marketplace. And I think it's highest and best use of an asset. And I think, it's protecting the Rakyat's money.
Are you any closer to that decision whether to go with Airbus or Boeing for your new planes? Also, I think that decision is due by September next month, at least according to recent media reports.
Yeah, I still haven't found the price I'm looking for. Mm. We're not happy yet with the pricing that's coming in on the aircraft. We're talking to parties about second-hand aircraft and also about brand-new aircraft. We may well get there, but we're not in a rush. We'll only do it when we get the price that we believe is great value for money. And I think it's a buyer's market at the moment for aircraft.
But if the goal is to try and find those cost efficiencies, shouldn't you go with either or, as in streamline your fleets to either Airbus or Boeing? What's the rationale for managing two different manufacturers?
I think it's very dangerous to have just one supplier. Mm. I think you're always better having a bit of creative tension in the room. So if we went with an all-one manufacturer, I think that would leave us very open to not being able to negotiate with people in the future.
Okay, trying to manage these questions that are coming in right now. Another one. Why did the airline go with the 737 MAX 10s instead of the A321neos? The Airbus can take container cargo, whereas the 737 cannot.
We got a remarkable deal on the 737 MAX 10s, and you know, in 10 years' time, Malaysia Airlines would still be reaping, you know, millions in benefit every year from the difference in the cost.
And if I recall, the MAX 10s are not due for delivery until 2021.
That's right.
So, yeah. And that will feature the live flat beds quite prominently,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but we got a hell of a deal on it, and a much better deal than we would have got on the other aircraft.
So how are you going to price those live flat beds then?
I think that there's demand for those. A lot of people are flying 5-hour flights through the night. They're very happy to pay the extra for a live flat bed. You'll generally see people will pay a premium for that kind of product because they can get sleep and it's better use of their time.
When you were last on the grill as well, you believe that oil prices would go up. In short, it hasn't. So what's your outlook on oil now? Because I understand you are hedging quite aggressively, 12 months in advance, 65%, yeah?
Well, the oil did go up. It's come back down again. I think probably towards the end of the year, when we get into the northern winter, I think it'll probably go up again a bit. We are hedging. We have a very conservative hedging policy. We hedged 12 months in advance, the quarter, 12 months out at the prevailing hedge rate at that time. That allows us to smooth out the cost over the course of 12 months, and it's quite predictable the way we do it. We won't hedge beyond that because that really gets into almost gambling, I think, at that stage. And the long-term prognosis, maybe for the next 10 years, I see with the growth in renewable energies and the usage of electric cars and the usage of autonomous vehicles and the drop, you know, solar panels have dropped 98% since 2008, the cost of them. We'd probably see a levelling off in fuel prices somewhere around $30, $35, $40 a barrel. I think that'll be a great decade for airlines, and it'll lead to some really good profits for airlines in the next decade.
All right, with the little time that we have left, let's talk China real quick. You've just launched 11 routes into there. What's the broader strategy here?
I actually think that the tourism opportunity for Malaysia in China is quite phenomenal. I've never seen a market like it in my more than 30 years in tourism. Really, there is no reason that Malaysia couldn't capture, you know, almost every new person who gets a passport in China to come here and visit, because the people speak Chinese here, there's Chinese food here in every street corner, and people are very welcoming here to it. So the real market, that potential, could be up to 50 million a year, but we wouldn't be able to service it.
Right, because you need that capacity.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's up to 100 million people we get in new passports in the next 6 or 7 years from China.
But you're not the only one trying to vie for a slice of that very, you know, lucrative and expanding pie, right? So it's tremendously competitive there. Yet at the same time, you're having to fend off the Gulf carriers. Singapore Airlines, Cathay Pacific, they're also going through reviews of their respective businesses, and these are recent undertakings. So how do you contend with this tremendously competitive landscape? And it's not just China alone.
It's old-fashioned stuff. It's about attention to cost, day by day, hour by hour, minute by minute, and just old-fashioned, good, hard sales and marketing trying to fill the planes. It's not rocket science, but it's tough.
Let's end with this. And Peter, you seem to have a fair amount of sympathy even from your competitors. I think recently you also said that you feel like you were dumped when Mueller walked out of the job as well. And I think everyone appreciates the tough job on your hands, though. Now, some say that you're actually doing this with your hands tied behind your back. Okay, set the record straight for us. Do you find yourself perhaps bogged down by vested interests, legacy issues, or invisible hands even?
No, I don't. But I would say probably I drive everybody else crazy because I keep asking everybody else's opinion and questions. So the style we've been adopting is complete transparency. So we're very open with our shareholder, Khazanah. We've actually got a lot of their people day in, day out in the office. And there's a very, very open dialogue with them. So I think that model worked very well for us. And I've had practically 100%. I've had nothing but encouragement and assistance from everybody else in government. And for them, it must be difficult because they have to deal with a Matt Sally. And there's an Irish one at that. But it's working quite well, I think, at the moment.
Well, we certainly wish you all the best. Hey, Peter, thank you so much for speaking to us here on The Breakfast Grill. Again, that was Peter Bellew, CEO of Malaysia Airlines. I am Tan Chung Han, and this is BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.